Hey, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment here with my co-host Manny for the Geek Saga Show series, The Media That Made Us. This series focuses on media that the two of us consumed in our younger or maybe just slightly younger years, media that helped shape our current interests and that we still love.
So I'm Manny, and for our eighth Media That Made Us episode, we're continuing our coverage of the reimagined Battlestar Galactica series and discussing the accountability arc, which includes BSG season three episodes, depending on how you look at it, 4 through 11 according to some sources, but 5 through 12 according to others. Either way, we're starting with collaborators and ending with Rapture.
Yeah, seriously, I'm too type A to not be bothered by the fact that these season three episodes are numbered differently depending on where you're looking. But trying to set that aside, we're going to be almost done with season three. We're halfway done with season three after this recording. So yay, that. Before we get started, just a heads up that you can follow me and therefore all of the Geek Saga endeavors at A Geek Saga on Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and YouTube. I do still have a TikTok. I probably won't be using it anymore for obvious reasons. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you're really out of the loop.
You're out of the loop. Yep. And you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Benissimo Art. I have a Blue Sky also. I just have to remember what the tag is. Like, I haven't used it. I used it for a little bit, and then I was like, oh wait, I should probably start using this again.
Yeah.
So maybe next time I'll have it on there.
Just a couple of other house cleaning items before we dig in. If you're watching this as a webcast on Facebook or YouTube, pretty please make sure to hit those like and or subscribe buttons. And if you're catching the audio only version on your favorite podcatcher, we could really use some more ratings, especially on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and would super very much greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to mark the Geek Saga podcast 5 stars wherever you're listening. Last but not least, we hope that you'll check out the Geek Saga Entertainment Patreon. We have a lot of tiers with just $3 per month, getting you the most prevalent perk of early access to our podcast episodes. You can check it out at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
Our format for this Media That Made Us series includes our top five moments that made it, basically our hot takes from the portion of the series we're covering, followed by any insights we've uncovered from rewatches and/or being longtime fans. And since this episode is all about accountability, it shouldn't be surprising that we're kicking off our top five moments with the last minute rescue from the Collaborators Tribunal.
Yeah, as tough as it was watching them put Jammer out the airlock earlier in the episode, if it hadn't been for Starbuck's need for confrontation and her big mouth, Gata would have suffered the same fate. But thankfully, Chief was there to confirm that Gata had to have been the informant, thanks to that very specific yellow dog bowl. So.
I was really torn on this, right? Because I hate collaborators just as much as the next person. However, when you have regular people with no oversight just dealing out justice and judgment, why do you even bother putting it to a vote? If you think they're a collaborator, just fucking kill them. Just go full measure. Why are you trying to dress it as like, oh, we're dispatching justice, you know? And it's like, look, I get it, kill them. Obviously, I feel like in certain circumstances, that's, yeah, sure, you know, but you're kind of talking about impossible situations here. So I don't know. And you know what's funny is that I feel like that's where Gata was kind of coming from with it and why he wasn't like defending himself. He knew what was going on. Why bother giving them the like satisfaction of saying, oh no, hey, I'm not one of these people, guys. You know, like it's almost like it's like he's coming from more of a position of strength like that. Because putting myself in that position, I'd be like, yeah, go ahead, fucking do it. If you think I'm fucking guilty, whatever. Because who am I to argue with God and country here, since you guys know so well? This is one of those things. If you all are gonna like vote to just kill people because you think they were a collaborator, you have some evidence, but without knowing like the full spectrum of the situation, like that's why we have courts and like juries and stuff, is because sometimes things aren't clear cut. But they just deal it out, you know? And fortunately, yeah, Starbuck is sitting there because she just wants to be Starbuck and she's got a Starbuck card. So she's like, no, come on, beg, be like, beg, and like say all this stuff and talks about a dog bowl. And then fortunately, for the love of God, the chief recognizes it and is like, hey. The part that kind of confuses me, right, is that everyone gets back on the ship from New Caprica, you know? Did Gata never have a conversation with the chief after that? Like, hey, bro, hey, man, I'm glad you made it. Dude, I hope all that information I gave you was helping you guys out. I did what I can. That's why I stayed there. Like, I would have like, hey, buddy, let me tell you what I was doing, right, when I was down there, because I served with Baltar. So I just thought, shoot, man, I got this yellow dog bowl. I don't know what to do with it. I'm just going to leave it in the dirt and I'm going to feed you guys information. You know, like, why did that conversation never happen?
I mean, agreed. But obviously, it's because they needed the drama. And that's literally every time anybody ever complains about lack of communication in a TV show or movie or whatever, I would say, I don't know, what do you think, 95% of the time minimum? Really, it's probably closer to like 97 or 98% of the time. It's because if there was that communication, then, you know, there wouldn't be a story, or the story wouldn't have as much, you know, oomph to it.
I just always put myself in those positions, you know.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Why didn't you just say something?
Yeah. Again, like, as much as you want to shout, just like, my God, communicate the thing. In this case, to be fair, Gata had already told things to Starbuck when she kind of started in on him in the mess hall, and she didn't believe him. And I do think that part of it at this point was that he just kind of like resigned himself to his fate. And that's why he didn't say anything until Starbuck brought it up. And, you know, thank the gods Chief was there. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So yeah, thank the gods Chief was there. That's for sure. Anything else we want to say about that last minute Gata save? I have some thoughts about Gata from later in the series, but.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. When
we'll get
there,
into that much later. Yeah. But for now, like, he was helping them. If he hadn't been there, so many more horrible things would have happened.
I think he would have redeemed himself if he would have shot Baltar and have been like, okay, but well, whatever.
But again, we kind of need Baltar to be part of the story. And there's going to be much more on that later, too.
Oh, yes, there is. Yes, there is.
Okay, so moving on to our number two moment. This would be Adama quelling dissension among the ranks with a few choice words in the episode called Torn. So we get through episode, whatever it is, 3, 4, 5, who knows, the one titled Collaborators. We get through that. They've broken up the secret tribunal. Zarek is no longer president. You know, Roslyn is back in place. And it really, because of that, most of all, that she takes charge again, because Zarek's just like, yeah, I'm going to kill whoever I want. They were bad. They collaborated, et cetera, et cetera. But they give everybody kind of a blanket pardon. In this case, a far more understandable pardon than some of the pardons that have happened recently. But, you know, just saying. Anyway, yeah. not to get into current politics too much.
It fell on the right day to watch the episode. You know, I was like, oh, I get
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. My pardon senses are tingling.
Yeah, exactly.
Not in a good way. Oh, God. Anyway, so Roslyn does the good thing, though, in this show, the good thing. And Starbuck and Ty aren't too happy with Roslyn putting an end to their little witch hunt for Cylon collaborators. And they are basically like going around causing trouble everywhere they can. And even Ronald D. Moore said that the scene where Adama confronts them in Torn was his favorite in this episode. This is not an exact quote, but it's very close. It was Edward J. almost at his best. It's not the full thing that he said, but he did say it was, yeah. It was Edward. I think he said it was Eddie at his best. But for real though, like, Adama is so harsh when he goes at Ty and Starbuck in this episode. Listen, I get that Starbuck and Ty both went through absolute hell on New Caprica, but I can't see how like anyone could claim that these two characters did not get on their nerves in this episode and the previous one, even, like, especially like Starbuck going the way she goes at Gata in the mess hall and then is like in his face and is like bag, bag, bag and everything, like, understandable based on what you went through, but also using your trauma to
be a bully.
Yeah, is not cool.
Because, like, they were just like, anyone who is not on the planet, they're just like nobody to them. They're like, oh, well, we were here and we were like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's just, I don't know.
Still, though, the things that Adama says, while totally called for, again, just saying, there's still oof, big oof. First, he tells Ty, you're full of bile, poison. And then when he confronts Starbuck, and I mean, let's be real, honestly, he kind of is, not just in the...
Yeah.
He is full of bile and poison in the literal sense.
The literal sense.
Because he's just drunk all the time. He's like back to being nasty old Ty. Love him. Really do, but still. And then when he confronts Starbuck, Adama tells her that she was like a daughter to him, or she, I think he says like, you were once like a daughter to me, but no more. And now she's like a cancer. Again, like, I'm not saying they didn't deserve to be called out so harshly considering the games they were playing, they being Starbuck and Ty, but still, wow. I don't think we actually see Adama be this harsh, hardly at all, really. Like, he's been harsh before with Apollo, but it's very rare that he is so explicitly talking shit. I mean, and yeah, saying really, truly what could be considered as mean things. They, again, they needed to be called out. And I don't think either one of them would have changed or done anything different if he hadn't gone to that, those lengths, but still, it's a lot.
Yeah. When you look at like the grand scheme of everything, right? He does this probably like 4 times throughout the series, mm-hmm, right? Because he did it with Kara Thrace when he found out she had passed his son, right? Mm-hmm. From the test. And he's like, you know, you better walk out of here while you still can, kind of pretty much, you know. So he's being like harsh with him. And then with fucking Apollo, right? When he's just like, you know, you've gone soft. He's like, get your fat ass out of here, right? But he's rough to these same people. He's rough to Apollo. He's rough to Starbuck and to Ty. And that's really the closest thing he has to like family, right? So he's being harder on them. You know, I feel like kind of like the military kind of gloves are off at this point because they're more like family. But yeah, that scene, it was just great. That's what Edward James Olmos, Eddie J. Olmos does the fucking best. He has this intimidation factor to him, you know, that he's nice and he comes off nice or whatever, but he's got this, you know, and the way he just like asks for the gun, puts one in the chamber and just throws it on the table like nothing, just all nonchalantly. And they're all like, you know, freaking out. But I thought that was a fantastically done scene. That is a classic Edward James Olmos fucking scene, you know, where it's memorable, it's heavy, you know. See, because it sucks because he had tried so hard to get Saul back on his feet from the beginning, right? When you look at all the flashbacks and everything, when he's getting him back up. So yeah, he's angry, but he's hurt. It's an angry hurt is what he is. And that's why he was like getting rid of that. I the way I would see it, like if I was in that position, it's like trying to eliminate that, like, okay, we're not family anymore. So now this is just going to be about business now. And that's why he's telling Kara Thrace, you know, you're like a daughter to me no more. And then he's telling Ty, you know, he's like, you're full of bile, like whatever. He's trying to make that disconnect because yeah, they are. They're both a cancer at this point. And if they're just wreaking havoc on the crew and just, I don't know, preaching fucking dissension and all this stuff. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't want them anywhere near anyone else on the ship.
No, for real. And again, it's like, you know that they went through so much, but so did a lot of other people. Granted, maybe not everybody lost an eye.
Yeah.
And not everybody had some Cylon trying to like Stockholm syndrome them. And it also doesn't help that these two people that probably had some of, if not other, minus the people who died, okay, they probably had the worst experiences on New Caprica, but they were already people who had been problematic for one reason or another for a long time. And also at the end, of course, Ty had to, or well, he didn't have to, but he did make the choice to poison his wife because she had in fact been a collaborator. And it's just like, you feel for what Starbuck and Ty went through, but you also, I mean, I'm sure you feel the same way as me. You're still fucking annoyed with them when they are, you know, like Adama says, they're spreading poison through the entire ship at a time when it's always the last thing they need in this show. But at this point, it's like especially the last thing they need because they're low on rations and they've got, you know, civilians crowded into the Galactica even more than usual because they lost a couple civilian ships, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it's a lot. It's a lot.
No, it's so. Yeah, it's absolutely a lot, man. I love those characters, you know, but it's like at that point in the episode, I'm like, look, guys, it was like, what was that quote in that new Deadpool movie? Turn the fucking trauma to a fucking accomplishment or turn it into cancer like the rest of us. Don't sit here and do this. Exactly what these people are doing. Don't do this.
I mean, and again, like you said, just masterful. And also like Ronald D. Moore said, masterful delivery by Edward James Olmos. So.
All right, you ready for the next one?
I think so.
The revelation of and discussion surrounding a virus that only affects Cylons in A Measure of Salvation. Ronald D. Moore, here we go again. It wasn't long ago the concept of genocide had popped up before. We'll talk about it when I get to my insights. But kids, you know what time it is. Genocide time. That's right, kids. Let's see if we can justify it this time. I was torn on this one.
Wait a minute. Would you say that the genocide train is coming down the tracks?
The genocide train is coming, guys. Here it is.
I'm sorry. We are not laughing about genocide. Okay, guys. I want to be very, very clear that we are not laughing about genocide. Genocide is no laughing matter.
It's a common theme
with
Ronald D. Moore.
Yes.
Is what it is, you know? And I'll talk about it more when we get to the insights. But here comes the train into the station. Look, who's the conductor? Ronald D. Moore. I wonder what the passengers are on that train. Oh, yeah. People who should probably just get genocided or whatever. Look, this is one of those things where I was really torn on, as opposed to the similarity to it that we'll talk about later. But the Cylons nuked their entire civilization, pretty much. They can be synthetic, whatever the hex, right? I don't feel like there was enough time that had passed between the attack on the colonies and to where they are now to accept them as their own sentient living people. This is the part where I don't think I would have been strong enough to see it like on Hilo's end and be like, oh, well, look, dude, they nuked us first. And I know that they tried to and I feel like they had thrown it into, I can't remember if it was the episode before. Was it this episode where Bulldog comes back and they were like, oh, no, because Bulldog went into their lines first. So the Cylons saw it as a threat. So the Cylons came back and massacred it. And I feel like that is kind of put in there almost, I could be wrong, to kind of make you think more about the genocide hour. Because if you just look at it at face value, it's like, look, dude, they came out of nowhere. You saw what they did on those farms. And it's not like they were torn on what they were trying to do either. They were all in unison of what they were trying to do, okay? Nobody tried to stop them or debate them when they nuked millions upon millions of people or tried to forcibly impregnate women in farms and camps and all this kind of stuff. And what they did, you know, in those internment camps like on New Caprica and stuff like that. I'm sorry, man. I think I'd have been like, you know what? Fuck them. You know what? Okay, here you go.
You're right. This is a hard situation to judge from either end of the spectrum because obviously genocide bad, okay? Mm-hmm. Hilo sees it as that more than anyone else because he is the closest to the humanity in them because of Athena Sharon. Now, that said, this isn't a quote only from this book series that I love called the Red Rising series, but there's a character in that series who is kind of on the wrong side of history for a long time. And even when he's on the right side, he's not necessarily on the right side for the right reasons, but he pushes the idea that death begets death begets death begets death. If we keep doing these things, if we keep making these choices where we're constantly at war with each other, then you teach your children to do that, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So while I understand that the timing of it all is like, oh my God, it's been what, a year and a half maybe since the Cylons first attacked and nuked all those planets, I also think that the idea of this biological warfare, that also sits even worse with me than maybe other ways would. And there's so many ins and outs of this that aren't real life, right? Like the whole point is that they infect a resurrection ship so that when these Cylons die, they essentially can't ever be resurrected. So they're not necessarily infecting the Cylons directly. They're ruining their ability to resurrect themselves over and over and over again. So that's just a different level that there's no way to compare that to real life, right? Like, trust me, I wish there was a resurrection ship where at least good people died, they could just be resurrected over and over again. But that's not real life. That's sci-fi to the extreme. And the thing is, you know, you and I went back and forth about the top five moments, as we always do. This was an obvious one we were going to talk about. And I never even wrote notes for myself about it. I read yours, obviously, but I never wrote notes for myself about it because I am so freaking torn. I think the biggest thing that I am unsure about in this whole episode, because we can talk for hours, days, weeks about the ins and outs and pluses and minuses and why it shouldn't happen and why it should regarding actually using this essentially biological weapon against the Cylons. But the thing that really sticks out to me is Apollo and how kind of almost gleeful he is when he's like, I have an idea. Mm-hmm. Like the little light bulb goes on above his head and he just thinks like he's the smartest thing since sliced bread and this is the best idea that's ever occurred to a man ever. And, you know, his idea being obviously to utilize this virus against the Cylons. And I am ultimately glad they don't decide to do it. You know, the thing about that is too, like Hilo has a point in that for sure, yes, they did the bad thing, but that's not all of the Cylons actually necessarily are behind what they did in the first place. So, yeah.
And that's true. But remember, in the beginning of the season, we were tossing people out the airlock. Because you know what I'm saying? It's like we were talking.
Oh, I didn't agree with that either, though.
Yeah. So, but just for the sense of like the Galactica people, that they don't really, it's one of those things, right? Time of war, law falls silent. Mm-hmm. You have to do what you have to do. And at this point, and the way I see it, the Cylons keep chasing them. They keep chasing them. All right. Anytime they want to like try to live in peace with them, it's not like that. They want to live in peace with them being the Iron Fist and getting to control these people's lives. So at this point, it's like survival, right? It's like, dude, we have so little people left. Every time we jump, they're showing up. They're trying to kill us. They're trying to kill us. It's like, how do you, you know, like if you have a house, right? And the house is infested with roaches, how do you get rid of them? You go to the nest, right? And that's how you kill them, right? And I mean, that's what they do with bugs and with wasps and, you know, all this stuff. What do? You got to kill the queen, right? And then that way the rest of them die, right? So that way they're not in my house anymore. And if the Cylons did their shit, nuked the colonies and was like, look, guys, that's what you get for like fucking with us. Bye. And they just left. Then yeah, absolutely. It'd be like, dude, they're not coming after you. You shouldn't go after them. But if they're literally trying to exterminate your race, they're trying to commit genocide on you. Because whether they really are or really aren't, because we get to see the other side of it because we're watching the show, characters on the show, they don't know that. They're just like, they're just trying to kill us. Or they're trying to steal our women so they can force them to have Cylon babies and make this like master race that the Cylons want. I don't know. I was torn on it too, because, you know, there's a part of me that's like, look, you shouldn't do things like that. It's fucking terrible. But I'm not the one who's on stems and jumping every few days because we can't get away from these people and at wit's end. And I just got finished being incarcerated for a year down on a planet and getting tortured.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, and also I think that the me of 16, 17 years ago when these episodes came out was probably like, yeah, lay the hammer down. But the me now, particularly with everything that's been going on in the real world, is a lot more like, ooh, maybe we don't do that, guys. Like, real world connotations do actually make a difference, and also growing and living and understanding different things as a person at 40 plus years old versus in my 20s. So I think there is also a lot of that. And I would love to hear from like other fans, like whether their opinions on this debate within the show, this whole debate about whether to get rid of the Cylons with this virus that only infects them is something they think differently about now than they did when this episode first aired in, what was it, 2007, maybe?
So, but the thing is, too, that's weird, is that if it was just like a basic kind of virus, like the way Cottle explained it, why don't they just keep it? You know, why don't they just make it? And then it's like, well, if we get attacked by human Cylons, then we can just use it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, as opposed to like, and that's probably the avenue I would take with something like that, as opposed to just like getting rid of an entire people, is be like, okay, well, I'm just going to use it as a failsafe, and I'll let them know that if you come on our ship, we all got the flu here and we're having a great time. So if you want to come on down and start some shit.
I feel like that's enough.
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with you or anything. It's just like, what else can you really say? But I would be very interested to hear from other fans whether your opinions on this have changed since you watched these episodes back in the early 2000s. Versus like now, especially like rewatching them right now with things that are going on in the Middle East. Anyway, so if you have thoughts on that, definitely let us know. And on that note, we're going to move on to, what is this, number four? Yeah, that moment number four. In the episode titled The Passage, we witness the death of a hero. Luann Catrain, aka Cat, call sign Cat, essentially sacrifices herself by ignoring her radiation badge while guiding civilian ships through the irradiated star cluster that is between the fleet's location and the algae planet that they need to reach, like absolutely need to reach because they're like out of food. And also, ew, the whole idea of these algae planets, like find another way to get food, please. Know, another algae planet. This is what we're going with. Okay. I will say, like, I thought this was a great last episode for the character of Kat, and one of the better ways she could have gone out at this point, because she really does act the hero and die a hero.
What I liked about it so much was that, yeah, it was one of the most peaceful deaths in the series when you really think about it.
Well,
she didn't get,
not well, for her so much, but
not for her so much, but because let's face facts, you don't see her die. You know, she does, but you don't see her die. She didn't get shot. She didn't get blown up. She didn't get thrown out of an airlock, but she died, you know, getting the radiation poison, obviously, but she did it to save the ship and, you know, and all this kind of stuff. It was a very noble death, you know? And I think that with a lot of television, when we think of like noble death is like, oh yeah, I went out guns blazing or to like help these people or, you know, something like that. I stayed on the ship while it exploded so everybody else can like get away. And it's like, that wasn't really the case here. I don't think she was even like trying to kill herself or sacrifice herself. I think she was just doing what she needed to do to get this ship fucking back and just didn't really think about it.
I think it is a little bit sacrificing herself just because she knew she was going to die if she kept doing this, but she did it anyway. And you're right, though. Like she did it because she wanted to get the ship back. She wanted to do her job. But in a way, yes, it is sacrificing herself because she knew that by doing that, she wasn't going to make it. Now, I also wanted to point out that she also publicly calls out the suggested excessive, essentially, use of stims. And yes, this is because of her past issues with them, but information is key. We always talk about like communication, guys. And it's really good that she did this, especially as it leads to Adama leaving it up to each pilot whether or not they want to use them. Not that Adama, I think, ever would have ordered like, yeah, use stims to get through it. But I think there's a difference between being like, yeah, just use stims if you want to, can, whatever, and being like, well, I'm leaving the choice up to you guys. And also you now have this information about how actually dangerous and destructive they can be if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm.
Because before that, before Kat spoke up, they really weren't. They were kind of just shrugging off. It's like, yeah, just sniff a bunch of coke and do your job, guy.
Exactly, dude. Dude, just get fucked up, man. You know, we're handing it out, man. Let's do this shit, you know? Grab you an eight ball and go get some algae, baby, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah. Shit.
No, look, man, it was... I loved her whole reaction to it, that she was very standoffish about it, given her past with the, you know, stems and stuff like that. I thought it was great. And I thought it was great that Apollo was like, okay, at your discretion.
What I didn't really like is that she could have just sacrificed herself because she felt bad about losing that one ship entirely and then therefore spent the extra time waiting for the ones she also thought she lost later. Instead, they also introduced this whole thing where she was a drug runner who also apparently smuggled criminals. I don't know. I didn't love it. I didn't love it. Just saying.
No, I feel you on that. It's kind of like, it's like, why now? Why are we going to give her the dark secret now? I think if they would have had her for a while, it would have been great if they would have built her character up. Because I'll be honest with you, I was not 100% with Kat at all. I thought she was just like Starbuck. She was just like the antagonist for like Starbuck, but it was the same type of character. Yeah. And as much as I love Starbuck in the series, there is a lot of times when I do not like Starbuck in the series.
And you also don't need two of them.
You certainly don't need two of them. And I felt that what they did with her character, like when she got involved with stuff, like I didn't really care, you know, when she was addicted to the stems, I didn't care because I was like, okay, yeah. So you're like, yeah, if I was a pilot and I was having to take that a lot, I'd probably be hooked on it also. I just didn't care, you know, but I felt like with this episode, they did a good job, but they had to use kind of a generic thing there. Okay, we'll make her like a different person. Like she was never Kat. She was someone else before. And then she's like you said, smuggling drugs, but then smuggling people also. I think they're just smugglers is what they are. They're just like generic smugglers.
But the thing is, like, she already had the whole stim. I don't know. addiction. I don't know if it was really portrayed as an addiction so much as like a, I need to be the best, so I'm going to keep doing this thing. Like, I'm so afraid of failing at my job that I need to take these stims, and it was too excess, which in a way, I guess, is addiction, but not in the sense of, you know what I mean? It's not like you're just going out. It's not like you're just going out snorting an eight ball to stay up all night and have a blast.
No. No.
Is that what happens when you do coke? Because like, I've never done it. So like, is it fun? I wouldn't know.
I don't know. But you're right. It probably wasn't addiction in the sense that I'm thinking about it. It probably just was, she's just pushing herself is what it is. Right. And she wants to be the best. And she's using this as a means for her to get there. And the
it's
fact
more
that
like that movie, Limitless. Have you seen that movie? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more like that.
Yep. But that goes to show about the level of care I had for the characters that I didn't even remember if it was just her pushing herself or that she was addicted, because I just didn't care. And she's a good actress and she did the part very well, but the writing wasn't there for me until this episode.
Yeah.
And then in this episode, I actually fucking loved her. And I was like, fuck, man, I wish they would have had more cat episodes. Like, I don't think they should have changed anything in this. I mean, I think the generic, the fucking weirdo guy who just happens to show up again. Hey, guess what? Remember our dark backstory? Mm-hmm. Ding, you know, we were dealing drugs.
Well, right. And not to interrupt you, but I know we have some back and forth thoughts on this. And like, one of the questions that I had posited was, do we feel that Kat, the character, was dealt a bad hand with this episode? Because yes, her death was heroic, but the whole thing with her creepy ex and questionable past, and then like Starbuck confronts her and talks all this shit to her, and it kind of like cements Kat's whole like, I'm gonna do the thing idea. I just, do we really need all of that? Especially as this last minute kind of like throwaway reveal. We've already known Kat was an abrasive character with issues, which again, as you kind of said, like, did we really need, I would have loved to see like a character that Starbuck clashed with, because this character was like totally kind and good and did everything right. And everybody loved her. And she was also like almost as good as Starbuck, and then turned out to in one instance be as good as Starbuck. Like, that would be a little bit of a more interesting, like kind of tete-a-tete, because
yeah, because it would have been an antithesis to Starbuck, not just Starbuck.
Starbuck be Starbuck.
Exactly. I think that they should have given Kat an episode where that was more internal dialogue, and then it eventually builds into this. I think that I'm going to say that I think that the actress was dealt a bad hand with this dumb story of, oh, well, I used to be a smuggler and I was like a different person, and when I stole this person's identity, like all this stuff. I don't know. Because there was no sign of her being any type of criminal or anything. And if they were going to play that card, because her character didn't come off to me as a criminal at all up until this episode when somebody told me. And if I would have saw a little dirty guy who hasn't taken a shower in 3 weeks and he'd been like, hey, dude, you know, Kat used to be this person. I'd been like, who the fuck are you, pal? You know how to beat the shit out of him. And I'd be like, you don't know fucking Kat. Like, fuck you, because she's never displayed that kind of thing. Now, saying that, if they would have given her that generic story, then they should have added to the backstory that maybe something went wrong and Kat felt extremely guilty about it. Maybe some kids got a hold of the drugs and they died, and she felt so guilty that she completely changed her name and turned her life around completely and only wanted to do good and wanted to be the best of the best because she was the worst of the worst. Now we have something. Now it's like, okay, that would work in conjunction with your shitty generic criminal backstory here. It's like they just kind of wrote it off.
I get that Kat is, she's like a tertiary character at best. And that's kind of why I'm like, but that's the thing. Like, if she's a tertiary character, she didn't need all of this. Like, we already know she's the drug addled version of alcohol addled Starbuck. Okay. Like, I don't know. I just, don't get me wrong. Again, I think that this episode sent her out in a really great way. She got to do... We got to see her feel the loss of that one ship, which wasn't her fault, but she felt it hardcore. And then she uses that pain combined. I don't think she needed the combination of that pain with this like blame from her creepy ex and from Starbuck in order to do the job that ended up killing her in the end. Anyway, I don't know. That's why I felt like the character was kind of dealt a bad hand in terms of like how it all not how it turned out, but how it led to that point. But at the same time, very, very heroic death for a character who, I mean, kind of like you, like, I didn't dislike her. I didn't love her. She was just kind of there. And
yeah.
Yeah. So
look, I just think that if they just do the part that I say, to where it's like, okay, if you want to give her this generic story, then give her a good reason as to why she had changed so much, as opposed to just escaping to like some criminal background. Like something traumatic happened. Like maybe some innocent people got hurt and she realized, this isn't for me. I don't want to hurt people. I'm going to be the best of the best. And maybe that's why she got addicted to STEM, so she could be the best, or that she was taking the STEMs because she wanted to be the best. She wanted to do the most good. And maybe that's why she went back for that ship and really did it. Not because it was like a tragic, like, oh, I got to sacrifice myself because of the bad things I did. It's like, because she's like, no, I want to save people. I want to do good because of these things that happened in my past that I fucked up.
The whole point is people can change. Obviously, there are some things that there are people who can't. And there are some things that will, all of this has happened before and all of this will happen again. But to assume that a person can't ever change and I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to something a little less depressing. Maybe.
You know, one day we're going to have to redo one of these episodes, except make it like a no holds barred, where we just do bring up things about real life and just like.
That would be patrons only.
Yeah, that Patreon only. Yeah, exactly.
You have but to like pay. The
$20 tier, you know.
Yeah. You have to pay to hear tier. Us talk all that shit.
Exactly.
All right, well, I think we can move on to something a little more positive.
And our last top five moment in this accountability arc is, not surprisingly, a very sweet reunion, that of Sharon, call sign Athena, and later Hilo, with their daughter Hera.
I got to get the oof part out first. Oof. When Athena gets to the base star and Hera is crying, she's sick. And she's also crying because she's just a poor, miserable, lonely baby with these Cylons who are kind of like, a baby. What do I do with a baby? And Boomer Sharon hasn't been able to get Hera to stop crying, but Hera immediately stops when Athena Sharon picks her up. The six who's there points out that Boomer and Athena are genetically identical, but Hera recognizes Athena, who, by the way, she only knew for like, what, days? I don't even know if it was days. I think it was like a day, 2 days at best after she was born.
And she was a preemie too, right? Didn't she come out early?
She was in like an incubator, and then Cottle was like, boo, she died. Poor Cottle having to tell that lie, my God. Justice for Doc Cottle, honestly, in that situation.
That's why Cottle smokes so much, because he's just kind of done. He's just fuck this shit on her.
But also, like, kind of fuck off, Boomer Sharon, for getting all mad about the fact that Hera stops crying, and then she starts, like, straight up threatening to kill Hera.
Exactly.
Athena's like, she's got to see a human doctor. Whatever's wrong with her is something you guys can't fix. So she's not entirely Cylon. She needs to see a human doctor, and they're like, but you can't take her from here. And Boomer's like, we'll just kill her instead.
Yeah, we'll just kill her instead and just destroy the entire plan that we've been doing this entire time.
My God. Like, seriously. Get your shit together, Boomer.
Exactly. Shut up, Boomer. Okay, Boomer. You know.
Oh my god. Anyway, thankfully that doesn't happen. They agree to let Athena take Hera to Galactica so Cottle can look at her, because again, like I said, the Cylons hadn't been able to figure out why Hera was sick. And you know, and then we get the super like sweet full family reunion with Hilo. Athena gets off the raptor with Hera, and it's just so cute. It's so cute and it's so good, and it's like, fucking finally. And as mad as they all have a right to be about the fact that they were lied to about their child dying and everything, and in that moment all it is like happy reunion time. And then it's like happy Cottle can figure out what's wrong. He does figure out what's wrong, because of course he does, because he's Doc Cottle. Listen, is Doc Cottle not just the fave of our podcast?
Absolutely. Doc Cottle is who I want to be when I grow up. That's who I want to be when I grow up.
Chain smoking and healing people. Allowing abortions left and right.
And dealing with uppity people, like, you know, he puts on a cigarette. He's like, do you mind? He's, yeah, I do, actually. I'm sorry you got cancer and shit, but, you know, I got to get mine.
We need to make a graphic about how Doc Cottle hero of this entire. It's not actually. It's not Rosalind. It's not Adama. It's not Starbuck. It's Doc Cottle, obviously.
Doc Cottle, man.
Anyway, so yeah, very, very cute family reunion, though.
Look, let me tell you. So before I go on this other rant, the family reunion was like really nice. But yeah, okay, Boomer threatening the fucking baby. It felt like it was shoehorned in there because even Grace Park, when she delivered the line, I felt like it was really awkward and almost clumsy almost. You know what I'm saying? I feel like she didn't believe the part when she was doing it. And I feel like this is like a situation that I almost felt like was like thrown in there because they had to make a discernment between Boomer and Athena. To where like, wait a minute, this one is different. This one is, you know, different. So that's the part that I just was like, I don't know. I feel like it was kind of written kind of heavy-handedly. Like, I understand what they were doing and I understand why they did it. I just felt like it was kind of heavy. And I was like, eh, okay.
Well, and I think too, first of all, we have to give all of the Cylon actors who are playing extremely different versions of themselves, because Six is another one. We have to give all of them credit.
Oh, yeah.
I say Six, the actors. We have to give all of the actors credit. To be honest, like, I don't disagree with you about how it almost felt like Grace Park, her like heart and soul wasn't in the Boomer situation, but who knows how they filmed this either. They were doing it back to back.
Yeah.
Not just tired, but that's a difficult thing to go from like portraying this just like pure happiness and love and excitement over the fact that your child who you thought was dead is actually alive to like being rude AF. And also it did feel out of character even for Boomer to be that. I think the lines, the choice for her to go that far were out of character for Boomer. It is hilarious. Lol, lol, lol. Hey, Boomer, all we want. But yeah. I do feel like it was out of character even for Boomer to go that far. I mean, like, I know she man, but like,
they did good when Boomer meets Athena on the Galactica, right? And they're talking to each other when the other Cylons show up or whatever. There was a time when I was looking at it and I was watching that scene that I forgot it was played by the same actress. Because they did such a good job with the Boomer, the facial expressions that she was giving off and the way she was talking, and then the way Athena was talking to her, that for a split second there, I forgot that they were both Grace Park. I was like, wow. I was like, that's how you do it right there. Like, they didn't have to do any kind of weird animalistic, oh, I'm going to kill this baby scene. It's like, dude, just do it with the nuance. Ronald D. Moore is amazing at nuance. Like, bro, just play your hand like the way you've always had, and it would have been good. But again, just to like sum it up, that's me nitpicking. I'm really stretching on.
I mean, I don't disagree with you. I do think that was weird delivery. I not any sort of like shade at Grace Park as an actor, because
not at all.
Again, we don't know how they filmed this. And I can imagine having to go from like A to Z if you were doing it kind of almost back to back would be really hard. But also I felt, again, like I agree. I think it was out of character for Boomer to go that hard against, you know, a baby. a baby.
Hilo, to me, is one of the most sufferable characters in the entire show. Okay. I love Hilo.
Rude. Because,
no, hear me out on this one. He has this just, I don't know, this light that emanates from him that is like, he's so good. He wants to do the right thing. All stuff that sometimes in a situation like that, it makes you want to be sick, you know, where you're just like, dude, I can't do this anymore. But in saying that, he is absolutely who I would need through the entire journey. So I would come out whole in the end. That's what I love so much about Hilo. And look, I don't have a problem with Hilo. My cat was named Hilo back in the day. Okay. So to anyone who thinks I'm throwing hate at Hilo, look, I had an animal that was named Hilo. Okay. So I love his character because of that, because he is kind of like this ray of light. When I say insufferable, I'm, you know, it's almost like in a sarcastic sense. Like when somebody is like really nice to you and you're just like, oh, whatever, guy, let's go get a drink. Shut up. It's like one of those things. But I feel like he would have been the person that I would have wanted to be with, so I can like leave whatever that situation is eventually, the way it ends, and still be half of a person. Because if I was left to my own devices with no Hilo, I would wind up like Ty or like Starbuck and just be a cancer or poison, you know?
That's the thing. I think that I'm more like Starbuck, but Hilo is who I want to be. So I am, let's say 80% of the time, good at finding a balance between the two. 20% of the time I'm not, because listen, nobody's perfect. Nobody's Hilo.
Nobody's Hilo. No, exactly.
Okay. I think now it's time to talk about some insights that we've gleaned from being longtime fans. As a reminder, while we're covering the Battlestar Galactica show specifically, I'm going to refer to any Easter eggs or bloopers or really deep production insights that we talk about as Deansights, because my partner Dean knows far more about this series than I ever could and constantly points things out to me. So I long ago lost track of what I knew before I knew him. That said, first of my slash our Deansights, apparently there was a whole abandoned storyline where Apollo lost his weight by joining the Marines, essentially, and becoming a sort of Spartan warrior. But they couldn't figure out how to make that entire storyline work. So they just kind of made him not fat anymore.
Like really quickly too.
Yeah. And yeah, they added like that brief scene into Torn, the episode it's called Torn, that gave the briefest explanation of how this happened. But also I feel like it's important to note that after the fact, Ronald D. Moore admitted that the fat Apollo storyline wasn't their finest hour. Cause no, it wasn't. I think it's legitimate that a person who doesn't have the responsibilities and is maybe also depressed about other things, cough, cough, the whole thing with Starbuck that happened in this set of episodes. Like we see the flashbacks in the boxing episode where him and Starbuck fuck and then they're like, I love you. I love you. Like screaming into the wind, and then Starbuck runs off and marries
him. But like Apollo, dude, it's Starbuck. Like, come on. There had to be a part of you that understood that something wasn't going to quite end up exactly as you thought it was.
She was also your brother's.
Yeah.
Like, come on. But yes, at the same time, I understand why somebody would go to ground and like not be taking care of themselves the way they had previously. And I'm not going to call him Fat Apollo because like, ew, I don't like that whole, I don't like that part of it, right? But I can understand how somebody can kind of just be fucking depressed, and because I've gone both ways. So I do not necessarily disagree with the idea to have him gain weight. I just disagree with the way it was handled. And I like that Moore actually was like, it wasn't the best thing we did, but it was kind of hilarious that like they had this whole storyline and they were like, we don't have time for this, or we can't make it work. So he's just going to be not quote unquote Fat Apollo again. And by the way, this is not me calling him Fat Apollo. This is the way he is referred to in the show.
Yeah.
And by the creators, et cetera. So just making sure it's very clear that I am not calling him Fat Apollo. Anyway, next one.
Okay, so you know how the Cylon hybrid keeps using the phrase end of line? That's a Tron reference. The master command program in Tron says it at the end of every sentence, and Moore liked the rhythm of the phrases, so he decided the hybrid should utilize it repeatedly. I love Tron. I'm a huge Tron
fan. Same. Well, you know? I like OG Tron. The one that came out, whatever, the second one was fine. It wasn't great, but it was fine.
I was a big fan of the second one, honestly. Oh, really? Like, I know a lot of people didn't like it.
I didn't hate it. I just like, it didn't live up to the first one, but what does?
No, I felt like it was just a more like modern kind of like retelling of it, which I think is different, absolutely, because I grew up, you know, we all grew up with the old Tron, you know, and that's what we were used to. I feel like it was a little more, the older Tron was a little more campy than this. They tried to make it a little more like, I don't know.
I mean, it was like, when did the first Tron come out? Like 82?
It was like 81, 82, something like
that. Yeah. So when you say we grew up with, let me be very clear. I did not grow up with. I was introduced to it in college by a good friend of mine at the time. And I fell in love with it immediately. And
it was fantastic. So, and like as a kid, because when that came out, when I saw it, I would have been 5 or 6 years old, you know, and we saw this and it was like, ooh, this is the future. Computers. Yeah. We're all going to be living in computers, you know, and like
driving light cycles.
Exactly. Like, you know, and you'd go to the arcade and you play the Tron game and it was like, wow, you know, it was fucking cool. So when I saw the newer one, it was, I don't know, it was more mature, I guess, in the sense, you know, and there was something I liked about it. But I will say this, I was a big fan of Blade Runner. Nobody was a fan of Blade Runner. It's more of a cult classic. Because the movie is slow, it drags at times. And when they made the sequel to Blade Runner, they did it in the same exact fashion where it was long, it dragged at times, and it became a cult classic. They literally recreated that magic that they did for the first one. So with this one, I liked it like that. I like those kind of movies like that sometimes. They're great to put in like the background when, you know, you're trying to do something, but
especially not remembering that that's the reference that Moore was making. Because when I watched it, to me, it was like it fit with what was happening. It fit with what the hybrid was doing and saying. To go back to something we touched on just a few minutes ago, there was a scene that was cut from Unfinished Business, aka the boxing episode, that showed Starbuck returning to the encampment on New Caprica after sleeping with Lee. And the only other person still awake in this cut scene is Ty, and they have a drink together, and she confesses to him about what just happened. Like, I'll be honest, like, it would feel weird for me for Starbuck to like wander back into camp and just be like, hey, Ty, I just slept with Apollo. But hey, whatever. She's probably thinking he's drunk, he won't remember. I'm drunk, I guess, too, still. I don't know. But they have a laugh about how like messed up the situation is. And apparently the scene that they cut, it was originally more about showing the shift in her relationship with Ty. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, like, I think that, again, it's a cut scene. I've never seen it. Maybe it's in like extras somewhere. And I do have the full BSG, the fancy Blu-ray set that somebody got me. Mm-hmm. A gift many, many years ago. So maybe it's somewhere in there, but if it is, I don't know. I don't remember ever seeing it. But to be honest, I think that if Ty said the right, quote unquote, things, or if it, depending on what side you're on, wrong things in response to her confession, it could have also pushed her toward running off to immediately marry Anders. I would fucking love to see this like full cut scene, or at least like even just the script, the dialogue from it, to kind of, I don't know. That's just because I do feel like there is something missing there, because yes, of course, it's Starbuck. And these are the types of things that Starbuck does. But in this particular instance, I do feel like there was something missing in her decision to run off and sleep with Apollo and actually like announce that she loves him and then immediately go marry Anders. I don't doubt that she loves either one of them. That's the thing. She loved both of them. But I do think there is a little something missing there that would kind of point A to point B us, you know, or point A to point Z us. Whatever.
I think anything with Ty and Starbuck would have been great, you know, because there is a shift in their relationship from when it started, which was just complete hatred towards one another, you know, where then they kind of become more like comrades as they go, comrades in pain or whatever, you know. Yeah, it would have been cool to see touching moments like that, because one of my favorite moments is when they reunite on New Caprica and Starbuck is all happy to like see him and he's hugging her like, oh, hey, look at you. And like these people, they technically hate each other, but it's like, look how they're just being so warm to each other.
Yeah.
You know, like it would have been nice.
How did this happen?
Yeah, it would have been nice to see more of that.
Our last insight.
Boltar in a body bag. It was an improvisation by director Michael Reimer and James Callis. Moore didn't even know about it until Universal called him and asked him why they would put Boltar in a body bag, and had to fib his way out of that call and call the set to ask about it. But Moore liked the choice. It sounded like because he thought it was more interesting than bringing Boltar back in chains or whatever. And he's right about that. I think that was definitely more interesting the way they did it, as opposed to like, you know, you're going to parade him around like a criminal or whatever.
Well, I mean, it also kind of like, I feel like if they brought him back more obviously, it would have caused a lot more of like a stir or some problems among like, you know what I mean? Hiding him made the most sense. And I find it fucking hilarious that they were like, I don't know how they made the decision. All I was told was that they were like, yeah, we should probably bring you back in a body bag, right? And you know, Moore gets questioned about it by like universe. They're like, what is happening here? Maybe they thought that he was like hiding the fact that Boltar was dead from them. That's what I have to guess. But hilarious. On to our personal insights. What's your first personal insight, Manny?
Of course, as I always do, I always bring it back to Deep Space Nine. Okay. So again, here we see the parallels to Deep Space Nine. Do we commit genocide or no? In Deep Space Nine, Section 31 infected Odo with a disease that would kill his people in hopes that Odo would go back to his people at some point. And, you know, they like meld together because they're like shapeshifters, in turn spreading the disease to his people and killing the entire population. Why? Because they pose the biggest threat to the rest of the galactic nations or whatever, right? So here we see the same...
The Galactic Federation?
Galactic, well, I just say to be coy, but yes, the Federation. But we kind of see that same thing, right? Like, we're going to infect this one person and then we're going to send them back to his people to infect everybody else. So you definitely see the parallel in this one where they're like, oh, we have this few people that are infected. We're going to just kill them. So yeah, again, the concept of genocide, it's like the weird necessary evil, but it's like bad. It makes you question whether it's a good idea or not, even though you hate these people, you know, like.
Well, and I think that's what Moore was always trying to do.
I just don't think he did it as well in Battlestar as he did with, and now, in all fairness, that story arc in Deep Space Nine goes on for a good bit. You see the people suffering. It's not just like a, like this one where it was kind of like a one and done, like, hey, it's a quick decision. Okay. Hey, all right. It's all over. It never happened, whatever. But in this instance, it actually does happen and the entire race doesn't die, but you get to see these people suffering and all this kind of stuff. But the difference is that I always saw the changelings more as like actual people, because they're actual people and they weren't created. They weren't anything, you know, just robots that, you know, and they just had a difference of opinion. So I feel like that one is more, that I feel it's more nuanced than this one was. And this one, I felt like it was just kind of like
ham-handed.
No, I mean, it was still good because it was short and sweet, you know, which was nice. You don't want that to like stretch out for too long. So
no,
it was still good. But it definitely, it wasn't as thought-provoking, I guess, as the when he did it on Deep Space Nine.
Okay, I'm going to lighten things up a bit because my first insight is less an insight and more of a silly thing that really fucking annoyed me observation. There are a bunch of shots from when Starbuck still has long hair in the Collaborator and Torn episodes that grate on me because while her extensions are the same color as Katie Sackhoff's real hair, yes, they didn't even try to blend them. Like, you can see the stark line between where her hair had art. And I understand that the way they were filming things, I'm sure if she had ever had long hair, they were like, oh, we got to cut your hair like immediately. We have to film too many scenes back to back. That's fine. But like, you can see the stark line where like her short hair ends and the extensions are below it. And I did a better job blending extension length when I bought and trimmed an $80 set of extensions off Amazon when I was in my 20s. So it really freaking annoyed me. I know that Battlestar isn't some huge budget show, but my God, you did not have a hair and makeup person who knew how to properly blend extensions.
Yeah.
And I know it wasn't for long and they didn't have a ton of shots of the back of her head, but it annoys me. Because I love Starbuck and Starbuck's hair deserved better.
Yeah. And it's funny because I didn't even think to even look at it. And you had pointed this out before I watched the episode. So that's all I saw. I was like, oh, man. I'm like, come on, guys. You guys got money, too. Like, come on.
Honestly, like, it looks like they just lifted her short hair and put a halo underneath it. It's called a halo when you put like just one long length, and it bothers me. Like, I'm this is not a high budget show. I'm not expecting perfection, but it literally would not have cost them like hardly anything more, if anything more at all, to just fucking properly blend her extensions. I think this is the first time I even noticed it in rewatches. I wasn't like nitpicking things because I wasn't covering it for a webcast, podcast, whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, whatever. I'm going to be annoyed about it because Starbuck's hair deserved better. That's along with okay, boomer. That's my new hashtag. Starbuck's hair deserved better.
Yeah, Starbuck's hair deserves better than that. Absolutely.
Now we can get into your serious things again. Jeez.
I know. All right, guys, this train is going that way. So we're going into the dark part of the tunnel. You can talk about hair on that train. You want to talk about the hair? That's the train you're going through. All right, we're talking about bad stuff here, okay? So similarly to Deep Space Nine, they're going to nuke the planet because there's the people on there and they don't want the Cylons to, you know, get the information of Jupiter. This one's a little different, but the concept is the same. They're going to nuke the planet just to kind of stick it to the enemy. The difference is that in Deep Space Nine, they actually did it, but it wasn't a nuke. It was just some particle stuff that would make it inhabitable to humans because they were fighting this like human terrorist organization pretty much. And the terrorists were getting out of hand and doing their stuff. So he's like, oh, if you're going to play dirty, I'm going to play dirty. So he's pointing these missiles at this thing. And the terrorist guy is like, you wouldn't do that. You're a Starfleet officer. You can only blah, blah, blah. And he's like, dude, fire the missiles. he fired the missiles and like just decimated the environment there so people couldn't live there anymore. I guess what it comes down to really, because it's also with the genocide thing too, it's that he likes to put that in there, you know, like you have to like, you have to do the dirty to get stuff done. Yeah.
Well, I mean, to an extent, sometimes not wrong.
He just, you just kind of see that a lot. And I think that's why I draw so many similarities to also like the to Deep Space Nine, because Deep Space Nine was the turning point for Star Trek, right? Because we were used to everything being this utopian future and everything is fantastic. And the only people that are bad are the people who are like, ooh, the bad aliens, the Klingons, look at them, they're bad. But on this side, it's like, dude, when you are far away from home and things are very different, just like the people in the Galactica are, they're very far from home. They don't have a home anymore now. They do in Deep Space Nine, but they're just on the frontier. They have to do things differently. It's so easy for someone. It's like, it's easy for someone in Finland to tell me how I should live my life when this is what I have to work with here in America. Yeah, that's great for you.
We feel you that extra hard right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, that's great for you to say that, right? Because you have those things within your realm to do that, but we don't. We live in the frontier. We live somewhere completely different. So we have to do things a little differently to try to do good, you know, per se. So it's that concept, you know, and you see it in Battlestar and you see it in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, that's why I get so exhausted recently with people from other countries being like, you voted for this. And we're like, no.
No, we didn't. Not it's just that we have
voted for this, but now we have to fucking live with it. So please be understanding to those of us who didn't vote for this. Anyway.
I don't even.
Anyway, my second and I think our final insight is hot take. I hate the Baltar torture sex scenes.
Oh yeah.
I fucking hate them. Ugh. I generally hate watching torture scenes like ever. It's only like the past maybe 5 years or so, I think less actually, that I've kind of started watching like horror films, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I still will not watch the Saw movies. Fuck that shit. Mm-hmm. I do not want torture horror. I want like mindfuck horror.
Yeah. I like mindfuck horror. That's the only type of horror I watch. It's mindfuck. That's it.
Plus, I feel it was nonsense for the Cylons, or well, maybe Deanna specifically, because it felt like it was mostly her, to enact this torture on him at this point, because even if she, Deanna, believes that he led them to the infected beacon, or is it like an infection beacon, whatever, infected beacon, infection beacon, whatever you, however you want to refer to it. I don't fucking know. Even if she believes he did this on purpose, what good does it really do to get him to admit that now? And then like there's that whole like mind sex thing with Head Six to take him out of the torture. It's just weird and awkward. And like the connotations regarding the whole like God with a capital G discussion, where he's like, he's having sex. I'm like, I don't like it. I don't like it.
And it's icky.
Yeah, it's just a lot of like, what the fuck is happening here? I know it's not just filler, but it also in a way feels like that, because again, like I said, even if he did this thing on purpose, and I know that he wasn't like completely honest with them, but of course we as viewers know he didn't do it on purpose. Even if he had, what's the point of getting him to confess it now? Either fucking kill him and be done with it, or don't kill him. Getting him to admit it doesn't make a difference, in my opinion.
I feel like they wanted a scene where Gaius was getting tortured and Six brings him out of it by having sex with him in his head. And I think they wanted to do that, but they didn't quite know where to place it. This was another one of those situations where I felt like none of this needed to be in here.
Yeah. And also Head Six bringing him out of it or whatever, or like getting him through it, I guess is probably the better way to put it, by having sex with him. It's like as he's enjoying, I guess, the sex, his mind sex with Head Six, Deanna on the other end is thinking that he's screaming about their God. And it's just, I don't know. I love this show so fucking much, but there are some times where I feel like, come on.
There are a few head scratching moments, and this is one of them. For sure, where it's like, okay, now not only do I just feel gross after watching this, but I don't even understand why it was there to begin with, you know? So,
and it's not like the sexual aspect of it by itself. Like if Gaius and Head Six have had sexual things happening throughout the entire series, and they'll continue to happen, I guess. It's just the whole torture. It's literal torture porn. There's no like nudity, I guess, but like, it's not just torture. It's also kind of porn. And I am I am like the last person who is going to be like judgy about some porn. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just, it's not for me, guys.
And the thing is that there's a few things in this show that are just, it's not for me, but it was done like, okay, I can see why it needs to be there.
Yeah.
But this wasn't one of those. Not this.
Any other last thoughts about these episodes? There were some good episodes in this set, but I do feel like there is some filler here and some, like, you know, we didn't even talk about the episode with Bulldog, and we discussed it beforehand and like, oh, well, maybe we'll have the fact that Adama kind of relinquished Bulldog for the good of the mission as one of the top five, but it didn't add up to the ones that we actually chose. And I just... you know, that and the boxing episode, like, I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying in the grand scheme of things, they were kind of, they felt
filler. And the boxing episode was, because when I watched it this time, I remember watching it and being like, man, this episode feels really long. You know, like, it just feels like a long episode. And I was like, you know, I like what they did here. I just felt like they could have made this. Like, they could have made this like half of an episode and then led into something else, as opposed to making it an entire episode about this. There was that. The other thing that I didn't like the whole incursion into Cylon space thing with Bulldog. And then there was like, oh, that's why the Cylons attacked us. But like I said, I feel like they did that because it would make the genocide thing more like easier to fight off, because it's like, oh, well, we don't have to protect. Technically, we did the first shot because we let someone in their territory first, so we can't kill all of them because technically it's our fault.
And I didn't really, like, you that, just you couldn't know? Do that in the first place.
No, like, but I'm
despite
like,
what they did, again, death begets death begets death begets death.
Exactly, but still, I feel like that's why it was kind of put in there. And
no,
it was
I
like,
agree.
I didn't like that. So the things that I did like to take away is like the haunting piano music when Voltar is in the Base Star. There's like that piano song. It's like haunting, you know, and I fucking love it.
Oh, Bear McCreary, man. A fucking genius.
I still listen to that song to this day. And then the songs that they use during like the boxing matches and stuff like that, I thought was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. But, and so the boxing episode, God, I think I just said the name of it, but I am blanking on what it was. Was it Unfinished Business?
Unfinished Business.
Yeah. So I will say that one of the things Dean and I were talking about was that there was discussion about having them go back and forth to like Cylon Base Star, because you said if it hadn't been just that, maybe it wouldn't have seemed so slow or out of place. But they originally talked about, should we have any of the Cylon Base Star with Baltar, et cetera, stuff in here? Mm-hmm. And they decided not. And I agree with that. I think the episode as it was good. Like, I think if they had thrown Cylon Base Star stuff in there, it would have been like, wait, what? How are we breaking? Yeah. Like, it was a flashback episode, and that's fine. And I'm not saying it's a terrible episode. It's just that I feel like the whole thing only served to show why Starbuck and Apollo ended up having an affair while he's married to Dee. And she is, I guess, at least she's like separated from Anders when she's sleeping with Apollo. But Apollo is not separated from Dee. And it's gross. And we'll get into that more, unfortunately, in the future. Yeah. As we close out the episode, just want to thank you for joining us for our 8th Media That Made Us episode on the Battlestar Galactica Season 3 Accountability Arc. We will be back on February to cover the rest, the final episodes, which is like 8 episodes of Battlestar Galactica Season 3. In the meantime, please don't forget to like, subscribe, or rate us 5 stars. If you're not going to rate us 5 stars, please do not rate us at all. I mean, I'm kidding. 4 stars is fine too. But do that wherever you're watching or listening. And as always, please consider supporting us by backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
Thank you for listening to the Geek Saga podcast. If you like what you heard, please check out other Geek Saga entertainment endeavors, including the Sagas and Sass webcast and podcast, and Ice and Fire Con.